Everyone, and welcome to Crime Kooks with your hosts Emily and
Rachel. Today we will discuss Ted Bundy, a charming American serial killer who made even a judge feel bad for him.
Whoa. Like, I don't think I've ever heard of a serial killer who can actually do that. Like,
he's supposed to be really charming, which is one of the reasons why so many girls he got away with so many murders.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. I feel like he wouldn't. How charming do you have to be? Like,
I mean, all you really got to be is a smooth talker, and then boom, would you look at that?
I suppose that's fair.
I mean, if you can convince anyone to do anything, like, hey, I broke my arm and I'm trying to carry these books back to my car. Could you help me? He goes to put them in the passenger side. Oh, why is there no seat? Pushes them in. And just gets in on the other side and drives away.
Well, I mean, that was kind of his MO. I mean, I don't know. I feel like if a guy came up to me, especially, like, at one point, he had killed so many women that they had actually, like, put out a warning or something like that. And they were like, hey, don't get in this car. Don't go with any suspicious men. And then he still got away with it. So he must have been, like, real charming.
Listen. There's plenty of people I know who, if a cute guy was like, hey, can you help me to my car? They would totally go.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a sucker for it.
Fair enough. Well, anyways, we kind of just went right into the crimes here, but I suppose we should kind of see the buildup here and, like, how he even became a serial killer. I mean, there's always a backstory for everyone, for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, Ted Bundy, really, he claimed that he had an uneventful childhood, supposedly. I kind of doubt that, personally. Mm-hmm. And apparently multiple people backed him up. Like, his family members were like, yeah, his childhood was completely normal. But actually, if you take a closer look, his childhood was full of antisocial behavior and clues as to how he may have grown up into the serial killer he was.
Well, that's kind of neat. I mean, at least, like, the problem... Okay, I hope they're taking cues as to why those things that they think he did that made him into the serial killer he is. And I hope they're taking those clues and, like, providing them and using them in modern day so, like, we don't get another Ted Bundy years from now.
See, that's the thing. They actually do use that. There's, like, that, you know, the triad thing for a serial killer: they wet the bed, harm towards animals, and the third one, I think, is, like, arson or something like that, or, like, antisocial behavior. Those are, like, different clues as to how a kid might grow up to be a serial killer or something like that. Something like that.
I don't really understand the wetting the bed part. I mean, I get, like, arson, I guess. And I definitely understand hurting animals for that scenario as to why that would lead to being a serial killer. But I don't understand why you would.
Who knows? I mean, at this point, we don't actually know whether or not he did any of those. All we know is that he displayed one of them, the antisocial behavior, for a pretty long time during his childhood. And speaking of his childhood, Ted Bundy was born November 24th, 1946, to Eleanor Louise Cowell. Originally, his mom wanted to put him up for adoption, but the dad didn't want that. I'm not entirely sure why the mom wanted to put him up for adoption. I guess she might have been pretty young. I think she was 20s.
There's that, and then there's also the thing about there's a lot of people who get, like, this gut feeling, and they're like, this child is not going to grow up to be a good person. You know, you don't want to be the person who raised the serial killer.
But, like, I feel like that's the whole thing. The circumstance is what made him become a serial killer. It's not just, like, you're not just born evil. It's more of, like, circumstance.
It is. No, I totally get it. No one's born evil, and I'm sure he's not entirely an awful person. It's just, you know.
Well, you know, speaking about the whole circumstance thing anyway, he actually began his early life thinking his mom was his sister, so that might have had something to do with it. Kind of weird.
Then we know where his really good, his acting skills came from.
That's true, because he did, he apparently, I don't know who he's talking to, he claimed in an interview with someone that he actually saw through his mother's lies and knew that his supposed sister was his mother. I kind of doubt that. I think that's him just trying to, you know, keep up with him. I can't even speak
him
right now.
Him being Neato?
Like proving his intelligence, probably.
He had a high IQ, so I mean... Which is fair. I just, how do these people have such high IQs and then they get caught for stupid reasons?
I mean, this is kind of like a little model that I go by. We all make dumb mistakes. So, like, that's probably something like that. I mean, you know, you think for a guy with an IQ of, like, what was it, like 130, maybe?
It was near 130.
Like the top 2% of the world.
Yeah, top 2%.
So you'd think that he'd be pretty smart, but I mean, he obviously wasn't smart enough to get away with, I mean, he did get away for a long time, but not that long.
I don't know. I feel like it's just, I mean, the one dude let someone get out of his house. Dahmer let someone get out of his house. I mean, why are you stupid enough to let someone do that?
Who knows? I mean, after a while, they kind of just become unhinged, so...
I mean, yeah, I guess.
It's not entirely unsurprising because this may be a kind of a genetic thing too, because apparently his grandmother suffered from depression and agoraphobia, and his grandfather had a very short temper and was prone to violent outbursts, so.
Hey, what's agoraphobia? I've never heard of it.
Agoraphobia, okay. So I always mix this up with arachnophobia. So agoraphobia is actually the fear of situations that might cause panic, helplessness, or embarrassment. So basically kind of like fear of fear itself in a way. I mean, maybe I'm butchering that.
Okay, but... hold on. He's afraid of fear itself.
Not him, the grandma. His grandma
had agoraphobia. I thought you said he had it too.
No. I just figured that since a lot of his parents and grandparents seem to be a little mentally not there, that might have contributed. So probably something like that. I'm not sure. I gotta be honest here. But anyways.
Ooh. Perhaps it's because he grew up in a scenario where fear was just something that was avoided at all costs, to the point where he decided he wanted to experience fear and he didn't want to experience it himself. So he inflicted it on others.
That's a psychology lesson right there. I mean, I honestly can't disagree. It's probably at least got to be half true. But it's
a possibility.
For sure. So I figured that, as we know, Bundy displayed a lot of antisocial behavior as a child. He also displayed a lot of more disturbing behavior. It wasn't just antisocial, but apparently when he was a toddler, he placed knives over his aunt while she was sleeping.
Oh my God.
So
that's not nice.
No, it's really not. And he was like a toddler, so he's like 4. So you gotta wonder, how did he get to these knives? They must have just been like lying around or something. Because when I was 4, I couldn't reach up the counter and grab knives.
Right. These people really do be out here like, oh no, he lived a normal childhood. And then he's tying knives above a sleeping aunt.
Totally normal. You know, I remember doing that when I was a kid. It was so fun.
Exactly.
Like, completely understandable.
Right.
But yeah, so this behavior does actually point to the fact that he, or yeah, Jesus, it does point to the fact that he actually might have either fallen victim to or witnessed extreme violence, because he might have been mirroring what he saw. Again, with the whole psychology that actually plays a big role in these kind of cases. But so we know that when he was a toddler, he also moved to Philadelphia, from Philadelphia to Tacoma, Washington, because his mom was getting married. So that might have been one of the reasons for his violent outburst. He may have been upset that he was getting a new stepdad. He probably wasn't too happy about that.
Yeah, especially since they made him take the last name of the man that she got married to, so he wouldn't be illegitimate. which obviously means that he had a very tense relationship with his stepdad, since he was like, oh, illegitimate kid? Mm-mm.
They just didn't want him to know, like, that that kid wasn't there, so he had to take the last name, which honestly kind of sucks.
And it really did raise the tensions between him and his stepfather, which could be another thing why he strikes back at women.
Wait, simply at women? Do you, oh, you're talking about the mom. I thought, see, you said stepdad, then you said anger at women, so I was like, wait,
I get it. I get it. I see how that would be confusing. But yeah, like, he strikes back at the mom for having given birth to him to someone she wasn't married to. He's mad about all the tensions that he had to grow up around, and you get it.
Yeah. And I mean, again, as I said, tensions were very high, and it did not help that the mother actually ended up having four other children with this new husband.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a big age gap.
Yeah, and it caused a big rift between her and
well, it's not her. That big of an age gap. I guess it depends.
Yeah.
I've seen bigger age gaps, that's for sure.
That's true. And but yeah, because of this, it caused a rift between Ted and his mom.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he was not happy about that. I don't think he was very close with his other siblings, and it made him feel very left out.
Exactly. And then he didn't even know he was illegitimate until he found his birth certificate. And they didn't even know who the father was.
That's what's the weird thing. Like, I mean, I understand how that could happen, but, like, I've never, like, known anybody. Like, I mean, I know there's people out there who don't know their fathers, but it's just so weird to think about that, like, that space just being blank on the birth certificate, because I absolutely don't know who it is.
Makes me think of Mamma Mia. But at least she had, like, a range of, like, three guys. And it was, like, it could be any one of them.
It could be you or you or you. That's what we know.
But, like, he was just, like, oh, I'm sorry. You did what? And didn't know who it was?
So, I think that's where the tension really kind of reached a breaking point. Like, it was bad enough when the other kids happened. But that's when, like, the tensions with his stepfather just, like, got real bad.
Oh, yeah.
They were, like, he's like, yeah, no, you're not my dad. You can't tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the weird thing is, back to him having, like, an IQ of, like, 130, which is pretty high, it's,
136.
Ooh, that shit, wow. I mean, I've heard of higher, but, like, that's still pretty high, especially for a serial killer.
It is.
So, but apparently he was never very extraordinary in school and lacked a lot of social skills. That is not very surprising. I'm, like, he was antisocial. It's not a big deal, although it's kind of a little weird because he grew up to be one of the most charismatic serial killers,
and he had really good grades too, but he wasn't the top of his class, which is the thing. He also never went on a single date.
Not one. No wonder the guy was, like, so lonely,
right? That could be another thing. He felt alone, and so he was just like, you know what, they won't have me. No one can. And just...
That makes it sound like he wants to kill himself. No one can have me.
Meant, like, no one can have you. If you don't want me, no one can have you.
That's fair enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably shouldn't say that, but...
What the other strange thing is, he's so known for killing a bunch of women, but he actually saved a friend's niece from drowning.
See... That makes me wonder his motives, because, like, maybe it was just a normal human reaction to just save the kid from drowning, or maybe he really valued this friend, but, like, if you've killed so many women, you can't possibly have that high of, you know, a liking or anything for, like, life and value human life that much, so it's just weird.
Perhaps it was romantic feelings, and since he didn't have them for the kid, like, he saw this girl, and he was like, she's pretty, she's cute, I kind of like her. But we're not going to let that happen, so. But then the niece, it's like, oh, that's my friend's niece.
I guess so. I mean, it just seems, I don't know how the scenario may have gone down. There's not a whole lot of details regarding that, because it's such a small story of his life. But it's, you know, it's kind of obvious, since he's a serial killer. He liked to scare people. He had a tendency for violence and breaking the law. So, like, it seems a little strange. Like, I feel like if he were in that situation, he wouldn't have taken very, or he might have taken a bit longer than the average human to react to that.
Which is fair.
Well, but. I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's totally fair.
I mean, it's not good that he was doing bad stuff. We don't like bad stuff. It's not good.
Bad stuff.
Bad stuff.
He was just doing bad stuff.
That's what we're gonna label it. Great adjectives.
Yeah, I love the adjectives there.
Thanks. But anyway, so Bundy confessed to 36 murders of women.
That's impressive.
I know, right? Like, that's a lot. But, like, the true total is believed to be around 100, maybe even more.
Holy crap.
Which, I mean, I'm not going to lie. That's impressive.
I mean, he's good at what he does.
From my crime enthusiast side, that's impressive. But from, like, a normal person, that's terrifying.
See, I don't have a normal person side, so I'm just, like, kind of in awe of how he managed to kill that many women.
Listen, I mean, he went into the mountains a lot, you know?
Yeah.
With them, I mean,
but he had to pick them up somewhere.
Well, yeah. But if there's... He picked them up, and people would just be like, oh, okay, bye, and then just... It's not like everyone else just went to the car with them, you know?
I'm totally not following what you're saying. Can you,
okay.
Hold on.
Like, so he had to pick them up, and you already know that he was charming and really convincing and all of that. So he was able to convince people to come with him. And then of course, it's not like other people came with them to the car. So he was able to just shove them in and then drive away.
I guess so. And so a lot of the women that he killed, I'd imagine, and considering their ages and his general age and when the crime spree started, they'd have to be roughly the same age. So, or at least he looked pretty young for his age, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was probably around 30 or so when he started killing. It would make sense. However, a lot of people actually speculated that his first murder was at the age of 14.
Which is interesting. But, I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. It feels like a lot of the serial killers, at least that we've talked about so far, have thoughts or doing things at a younger age.
That's true. Jeffrey Dahmer did start having more of those sadistic thoughts at 14.
Exactly.
It's just the correlation is so weird.
It is.
They are both pretty infamous serial killers, though, so I guess it would make sense. It's just, it's so weird to think about that.
Yeah. But other than that theory, it's believed that he started in 1974 because many women in Seattle and Oregon started to go missing. In fact, most of his later victims appeared really similar to his college girlfriend, whose breakup tore him apart, apparently.
So they must have been pretty close, I'd imagine.
I think he has something against women from past experiences. Because like it said, that tore him apart. So he's still attracted to her, of course, because he liked her a lot, clearly.
I'm not sure you can say he loved her, per se. I'm sure he might be capable of love, but is he really, like... That's kind of the question here.
I mean, you can totally be capable of love and still murder someone. There's people who murder people out of love all the time. It's just maybe his way of coping with heartbreak was murdering everyone.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Of the same gender, so that way other people wouldn't have to go through the same suffering he did.
That is such a noble cause.
I know.
You gotta support him, man.
It's so kind of him.
He's such a kind and generous soul.
Right.
But yeah, so he did kill a lot of women. And I guess what mainly triggered it was a college girlfriend, since it's suspected to start around 1974. Yeah. So his main MO, we already talked about this a little bit, but like to expand upon it, and it just gets worse, honestly. We know that he helped him into the car. He would then proceed to rape and strangle them once they had gotten to a secluded location. So that sounds fun.
Which, I mean, props to him for going to the secluded location. It's awful that everything else he did, but like...
Yeah, I mean, from a serial killer perspective, that was pretty smart.
It was. I mean, there's plenty of people who are like, you're alone in this public space, I'm gonna kill you.
You're alone.
And then it's like someone walks in, like in Among Us. You're like, ha, you shouldn't have been alone. And then you walk in one direction and someone walks right by you and finds the body. And it's like, oh, I wonder who did this.
That's happened so many times to me, and it's sad.
I've only been imposter twice and it's happened both times, so.
But yeah. So, he was able to rape and murder a bunch of women this way. He would typically strangle them, like we mentioned, or bludgeon them. And then he would also mutilate them after death.
That's just overkill.
Right. He would sometimes return to the corpses where he dumped the bodies, or even take them home to get further sexual pleasure.
I was going to say satisfaction, but yeah, that works too.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to confuse anyone. Like, satisfaction for what, you know? But yeah. In some cases, he would even display their decapitated heads in his apartment and sleep with their corpses until decay made it unbearable.
Okay. So he's talking about decay making it unbearable. How unbearable? Like, until the stench got in? Because people are going to notice that. Like, I
assume it's the smell, which is why it would become unbearable. Because it's going to, okay, I know the smell is going to take time to build up, but since he's sleeping with it in his bed, you know, it's like, well, you're 2 feet away from it, you know? It's like...
But, like, how did no one else smell that? Did he, like, have his own house, I assume? Or, like...
Probably.
That's just so weird.
If it works, it works. But because of that, his body count rose.
What's your body count?
I don't have one. I'm kidding. I don't have one, and I don't plan on having one ever.
Okay.
Yep. But, anyways, so his body count rose, and the witnesses' description spread. And then several people contacted authorities to report Bundy as a suspect.
See, I thought he was going to a secluded location. What is this man doing?
Well, I mean, you still see him talking to the girls. Like, if you knew the girl and you're like, hey, there's my friend from college. Then it's like she walks away with this man. She's like, huh, that's interesting. And then all of a sudden she disappears. It's like, I saw this person.
That's a little sus.
Exactly. I mean, he had to get them somewhere in public, you know.
But, okay, the worst part about that I have to say is that the police were so dumb. They constantly ruled him out based on a seemingly, quote-unquote, upstanding character and clean appearance.
Which is basically just judging a book by the cover again, which is a thing that I think we're getting a little bit better at, but we still really need to work on it.
It's just, it can be really hard sometimes. I mean,
it can. I mean, I totally understand. It's just, you shouldn't look at someone and be like, they don't look like they'd be a bad person.
They don't look like they'd kill me. It's right. Fine.
Which, I mean, yeah.
But, yeah, so because of this, he was obviously able to avoid being arrested. And
he also was able to avoid arrest by he learned how to leave almost no evidence that could be traced by forensics.
See, that's the only thing. I feel like back then in the 70s, that really wouldn't be that hard. I mean, if you really think about it, it's the 70s. Forensics weren't the best.
It wasn't the best, but it's way better than, like, it was in, like, the 20s with Bonnie and Clyde and all that.
That's true. We had developed some techniques.
Right. But one day during the summer at Lake Sammamish, Bundy abducted a girl named Janice Ann Ott, who was 23, and a girl named Denise Naslund, who was 19, which you have to wonder, how did he get two of them at the same time? Because, I mean, like, they're not both going to fit in the front seat.
Yeah, but, like, they're both... Okay, so I can see how he might have gotten them together because they seem both about college age, but in the same truck, he might have had a different vehicle is my guess.
Maybe. My mom always says, you know, just because you're in a group doesn't mean you're safer. As long as he gets one of you, as long as he's threatening to kill the one. And
that's so ominous. Your mom's like a freaking serial killer.
No, my mom thinks everyone's trying to serial kill me.
That's
There's
fun.
A difference.
Anyways. Serial kill you.
Witnesses described a handsome young man who called himself Ted.
He used his real name?
I know.
Stupid.
Right? And then I bet he got cocky. I bet that's what happened.
Probably.
But police started to identify Bundy's way of getting women to follow him by wearing his arm in a sling and asking for help.
No, I wouldn't help him. I'm just a jerk by nature, so I just wouldn't help anyone.
I've had conversations with people about Bundy, and they're like, oh, no, he definitely would have gotten me. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But Hunter, not like Hunter, some like person named Hunter.
I hate that name. It's
a nice name.
No, I don't like it's that just, name. It's just kind of obnoxious. I'm sorry.
I'm cutting that out.
No, what?
Yes.
Listen, I'm sorry to anyone. Hunters. If anyone here is named Hunter, not that you'd probably be listening to our podcast, but if you are, I'm sorry. Kind of.
Mm-hmm. But he discovered the remains of Ott Naslund and Hawkins, who was another prior victim, 1 mile east of an old railroad trestle. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Just outside of Issaquah, Washington. And according to Keppel, this site was a multi-use environment, which makes sense. I mean, how else would you find multiple bodies there? I mean,
yeah. Wait, so Keppel must have been one of the investigators, I assume, like a detective.
I think so. It's likely. Bundy also attempted to kidnap Carol Durant,
Carol who Maskin.
Was eight, killed her husband. Oh God, him.
No. Carol Durant, just go back to her.
She was 18 at the time, and she was at the Fashion Place Mall in Murray, Utah.
You said this as a Murray, Utah.
I was thinking about whether I should be like, oh my God, I had a teacher named Miss Murray. I liked her. She was a good teacher.
All right.
But he posed as a police officer. Which, I mean, I guess it wasn't that hard to do back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But, you know, at 10:15 p.m. that same day, Deborah Jean, who was 17, Kent's father gave her the keys to a car to pick up her brothers from a roller skating rink, and she never got to her parents' car. Bundy claimed in an interview with Salt Lake County Sheriff's Detective Dennis Couch that he left her body in a grave, but her body has never been found, which honestly, I have been told so many times, if you're going to murder someone, hide the body in a cemetery. Not only do not a lot of people go there, but like if you just bury it, I mean, who's going to count?
That's true, but I feel like, see, there's always that soil displacement. I mean, I know in the 70s they didn't know a lot about that, but there's like a way of knowing if something's an unmarked grave.
Oh, no, I totally get it.
There's also the fact that they're probably looking hard for this girl. Because as you said, her friend's father gave her the keys to a car to pick up something.
Yeah.
So people were looking for her. People knew she had gone missing.
Exactly.
So they're probably more determined because they actually were more involved.
Yeah.
But yeah, he kind of has like a kidnapping and killing streak.
He does. Here's a weird one. So you know how he saved his friend's cousin from drowning?
Yeah.
He kidnapped and drowned a 12-year-old girl named Lynette Dawn Culver in a bathtub.
Wait, it was actually the friend's niece though, wasn't it? I mean, she would have been about this girl's age, right?
I don't think it was because he saved her. Why would he drown her?
No, I don't mean the same person, because obviously it's been years, but I mean the girl who he saved from drowning could have been around the same age as this girl.
That's very possible. Very possible. I don't know. There's so many reasons why he could go after a woman because of what's happened in his life. You know what I mean?
That's true.
But he then said that he discarded her body in Snake River, but her remains haven't been found either.
Well, I mean, he did discard her in a river. I gotta be honest here.
Listen, bodies of water are a good way to go when it's deep. Like, if you went to, like, a real... I shouldn't say that.
No, 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 continue.
No, like,
Okay, they can only make the nets go down so deep, and it costs a lot of money to get dive teams. And after a while, the body's discarded. After the body's discarded, water starts to go under the skin and tear stuff up. It'll really ruin a lot of evidence, especially if there's any animals down there who would eat, like, things off of them. I'm just saying.
That just makes me really creeped out, because, like, you gotta know, we've only explored, what, like, 5% of the ocean? Like, some, not to freak anyone out, but just imagine how many bodies are down there.
Right.
That just scares me.
I mean, for the most part, there's, like, you know, osmosis. So water goes under the skin until eventually it bursts.
How do you remember this? I failed science.
Oh, that wasn't a thing I learned in science. Osmosis, I learned what it was in science, but I didn't learn that's what happens to the skin.
But where did you learn it from?
Oh, I learned that from a book I read.
What book, Rachel?
It was, God. Oh, I don't remember the title.
How to Get Away with Murder 101.
No, it was this girl whose dad was a coroner.
Oh.
And they had gone to this motel, and this dude had drowned from, not drowned, he died in the bath because he had drug overdosed. And it had been a few days, and they were like, something smells really bad, and we don't know what it is, and no one's seen this dude.
So
he rented it. So they went in, and he was dead, and he had maggots under his skin, and the water had gone under his skin as well. And
I'm just gonna stop you right there. How do you remember all this, but not the title of the book?
Listen, I have really good memory about stupid stuff.
All right, then. So now that we fully derailed this conversation, I think we should try to, I don't even know.
What?
We were talking about the little girl.
Is what? Another 12-year-old girl he kidnapped and murdered was Kimberly Leach.
Another one?
Another one.
There's another one?
Another one. She was a junior high school student who disappeared in the middle of the school day. Which, I mean, come on. The middle of the school day in middle school. Who? Why was that not? It makes me so mad. But she was one of his youngest victims, and it was his last murder.
Well, I mean, yeah, after you decide to kill, like, what, 2 12-year-olds, the police are going to get real pissed.
At least 2. And right. 1 in the middle of the day. I mean, come on.
I feel like at that point, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, this, you know, got them angry. And at this point, I think the police pretty much had come to a definitive conclusion as to who this man was, Ted Bundy. They knew who he was. They just had to get the evidence to find him.
Exactly.
So now we move on to, we're kind of getting towards his end of his crime spree. So in August of 1975, the police did attempt to stop Bundy for a driving violation. I mean, if you can't get him for murder, get him for whatever you can.
Yeah.
Because he was blowing through stop signs. I wonder where he's going in such a hurry.
Right. Then they found him. They were finally able to pull him over, and they found him with a bunch of suspicious stuff in his car, and then saw the passenger seat and his car was removed. So he was arrested on the spot under suspicion of burglary.
Burglary, out of all of the things that those could point to. Burglary.
I think it might have been like stealing the car.
That's true.
Because, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so he was taken in and picked out of a lineup by Carol Duranche, who's, we mentioned earlier, is the girl he kidnapped.
So she survived.
Yes, she did.
She survived and got away.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty epic.
It is. Kind of makes me think of this one girl who was hitchhiking. And this man, she was just not having a good time with her family, but she was hitchhiking away, and this man was like, oh, I'll help you. And then he pulls over, and he was like, you know, if you do this for me, I won't hurt you. And of course, he's raping her. And then she eventually blacks out, and then she wakes up for a split second and sees him with an axe over his head, over her. Not over his head, but like over.
Yeah.
So he was bringing it down onto her. He was cutting her arms off.
Oh,
This is a real woman too, and she's still alive, and she's he's in jail now. Everything's good there. Well, and actually he had pushed her down a hill into like a creek or a drain or something. And she had to try and climb up the hill, not able to use either of her arms because, you know.
Wait a minute. What's this girl's name? I feel like I've heard of the story.
I don't remember, but she had to walk like quite a few miles with her arms held above her head so that way she wouldn't die from blood loss. And she's still alive to this day.
Lovely little.
So I'm happy for her, but I'm sorry. It just made me think of how, you know, there's quite a few that get away.
Yeah, lovely little anecdote.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. And then after some of the things in his car were found in common with what Carol had described in her attacker's car, the police felt like they were confident enough to charge him with attempted kidnapping. He was given 15 years in prison, but was able to escape from a library window during a pre-trial hearing in 1977, which of course it's through a window. Like, I mean, who's not surprised?
It's just such an obscure way to escape. It's like, it almost sounds like it's so common, but it's also like just, I don't know how to describe it.
It's cliche.
It's, yeah, it's so weird.
Like anytime you're watching a movie and it's like, oh, how did the serial killer get in? Well, they came in through the window.
Yeah, it's always the windows.
It's always the windows. But
yeah, luckily for everyone else, he was captured a week later, but escaped again on December 30th, 1977.
Figures.
Yeah, I don't know how he escaped this time, probably through a window again. It's always the windows.
It's always the windows.
Always. And he made his way to Tallahassee, Florida, where he rented an apartment under the name Chris Hagen. He finally learned his lesson. He didn't use the same name.
Why would you use a different name for the house, but not a different name whenever you're trying to actually kidnap someone?
But that was like before. He's learned his lesson now. That's like the whole point I'm trying to make. He's learning. He's growing up.
Of course. Of course.
I'm so proud.
But yeah, after many other murders, Bundy was finally captured a week after, on February 9th, 1978, when he killed the 12-year-old girl that we last talked about, and he was caught driving a stolen vehicle. He went on trial in Florida on June 25th, 1979 for the murders of the sorority woman.
These sorority women, there was what, six of them?
Yeah, I think so.
They were in between the time when he, just to clarify, they were in between the time when he escaped and when he got kidnapped again. So, like, you gotta wonder, how did he get himself into a sorority house?
He just said he got kidnapped.
I did. See, my brain isn't working today. I don't even know what I'm saying. I mean, okay. What? I meant after he escaped. After he escaped.
In the time he got kidnapped again?
Stop. That's mean. You're hurting my feelings. In the time that he escaped, he killed those sorority women, and I think there were definitely a couple others in there.
Oh, absolutely. Because there was that little girl. But the trial wasn't on TV, but he was found guilty on both murder charges and given two consecutive death sentences with the electric chair.
I don't know. The electric chair, like, is that even still around?
I think so. Why do we use the electric chair and not, like, how we put down animals whenever they're in pain?
But see, that's more of a peaceful way. I'm just saying.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, if you're gonna kill someone, that was awful. I didn't mean that. I mean, like, I don't know.
I mean, he killed a lot of people. I think it's just our way of justice and revenge, and I'm not entirely sure. I don't know. Like, it's kind of just, like, reminds me. I feel like there should be, I'm glad there's, like, more effective ways now, like lethal injection.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if you or anyone else will, like, remember this, but that one case that we worked on in, like, eighth grade, where this kid was in the electric chair, and he didn't die by the first shock, so it was a whole moral debate on whether they should shock him again, because technically...
I do remember that.
Yeah, technically, he'd already gotten the electric chair, so was it right to kill him?
Well, and the problem was, they weren't even positive it was him.
That's the worst part. And they did end up shocking him again.
They did. That he did really, die.
That annoyed me.
And I was very upset about it.
That,
But on January 7th, 1980, Bundy went on a trial for killing Kimberly Leach, which was the 12-year-old girl. And he allowed his attorneys to represent him in this one. In the other ones, he didn't allow them to.
Got too cocky. That's why he got sentenced to the electric chair.
Exactly.
Now he doesn't have much time. I don't see the point in doing this third trial. He's already gotten sentenced to death, but I guess just for good measure.
I mean, there's also the closure thing. Parents want to know who killed their kids.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily have to have a trial to know who killed them.
No, but it's nice knowing that they're going to get the justice they deserve for your kid, too.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So he had represented himself and others, but now he was letting his attorney do it. And they took the insanity plea, which was the only defense possible with the evidence the prosecution had.
That might have been why he represented himself in the previous trials. He didn't want to take the insanity plea.
Right.
But that just ended up just really messing with him in the end.
Mm-hmm.
That was not smart.
Unlike the first trial, not only was he visibly angry, but he also slouched in his chair and had a haunting glare.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he knows he's lost. Mm-hmm. He's lost the battle. There's no point keeping up the charming persona anymore.
Right.
He's kind of like a child after they know they're not going to get what they want.
Exactly.
Screaming, crying, throwing stuff, beating up their brother like I did.
Right. That's whenever he got death sentence number 3. But after many appeals, Bundy's last day of execution was on January 17th, 1989. Before he was put to death, he gave the details of more than 50 women he had murdered to Washington State Attorney General's chief investigator, Dr. Bob Keppel.
Dr. Bob Keppel, there he is again.
Exactly.
So this guy's been through the case almost the entire time.
Whole time.
Like he's kind of like those lead detectives that you see in those TV shows, finally getting the justice. But I feel like that was kind of Bundy's way of almost kind of sticking it to Keppel. It's like, you didn't even find all the women I murdered. I murdered over 50, you loser.
Right. He confessed that he kept some of his victims' heads at his home.
Aww.
And performed necrophilia with some of them. In his final interview, he blamed his exposure to pornography at a young age as being the reason for his murderous tendencies. Which, what have we been saying this whole time?
This entire time. See, part of me wants to believe, or part of me thinks that he could be lying and just making up excuses, but the other part, there's just so much ample evidence pointing to the fact that he had an unstable childhood that it only makes sense.
Right. When his execution came, a lot of people were happy, but Bundy was obviously not. His charismatic self was totally gone.
Completely gone.
As he moved to the death chamber, he had 42 witnesses present.
I'm surprised there weren't more. I gotta be honest.
When he was strapped to the electric chair, he started to mumble his last words were, "Jim and Fred, I'd like you to give my love to my family and friends."
See, that just, I'm surprised those would be his last words.
Right. I always feel like a serial killer's last words are gonna be something ominous.
Or haunting. But Jim and Fred, I assume, are friends of some sort or some other family. Or maybe they're just some guys in the room. He's like,
perhaps the officers?
That might actually make sense. But the other guy's name is Bob, so that means there's at least a couple of officers in there. I mean, I guess it would make sense he was.
Well, because I don't think the police officer themselves are the one who sets up the electric chair.
That's true. There's a lot of other people in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's typically, I don't actually know how much are in there. I've seen TV shows with it. There's, 8 sometimes.
Mm-hmm. But I have to say, I find it interesting that this, he also did necrophilia and stuff as well. Because this is now 2 really popular serial killers who murdered and then did necrophilia. I don't know. I find that rather intriguing considering a lot of, there's plenty of other crimes like arson and all that, but for some reason, with the 2 we've talked about, serial killing and necrophilia are up on the list.
Well, you got to keep in mind, these serial killers are the more infamous ones. Those ones tend to lean more towards, more sexual acts and like the more gruesome things. Not to mention the fact that Jeffrey Dahmer actually wasn't too much before Ted Bundy. He was like in the 60s. Yeah. So Ted Bundy, not that I want to say this, but might have been in words inspired by him. They were, their crime sprees actually kind of overlapped a little for time.
They did overlap because he didn't get caught until the 80s something, right?
Yeah, something like that. So that means that, you know, who knows, major inspiration from him, because Ted Bundy was a bit younger than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. I don't know. I just found it interesting because they also both did a lot of strangling.
Yeah, it's like all kind of interconnected. Like, I mean, I kind of hate to say that, but I think a lot of criminals draw inspiration, if you will, from other criminals.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, they get ideas, and sometimes you think it's your own idea, but then you, it's like, you know, you think you come up with a great idea, you're like, whoa, I'm so smart. And then you hear
something. No one's ever strangled a person before.
Exactly. But, like, then you realize, oh, maybe this is where I got all this, these ideas from.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, what, to be fair, you can kill anyone with anything.
That's true.
You could murder someone with a spoon.
That would be
funny. I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong.
I wonder if there's a serial killer who's murdered people with a spoon.
The spooner.
Okay. But, yeah. I just found that really interesting because, you know, it's just kind of whack.
Yeah, I mean, Bundy, while he was one of the more gruesome killers out there, he most certainly was not the most original.
Right.
And I think that's something that we need to keep in mind here. The most important thing is that not all, even though there are a lot of different people out there, a lot of serial killers do have similar, you know, childhood stories, similar behaviors. That's kind of why they came up with those profilers and stuff. There's systematic behavior between killers that helps you to identify them.
Exactly.
So that kind of draws it to the main point that this whole podcast is about. We're not just here to like inform people about criminals. We're also kind of just trying to like, I mean, I don't want to say we're like the safety police. We're not Dwight K. Schrute here.
No.
But we are here to kind of like give people knowledge about that kind of stuff, you know, so they can stay safe.
Right. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that kind of like, that ties it up really neatly. That's kind of like drawing this to a close. I mean, Ted Bundy's dead. He has been for a long time. And I mean, that's kind of how his story ended. And it's kind of how we can wrap it up here. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Emily. And
I'm Rachel. And tune in next time to hear about the Zodiac Killer.
And don't be stupid and stay safe.